It's coming at an earlier time than we had previously expected, so I'm very, very pleased about that.
Australian Health Minister says Pfizer drug could soon be approved for children. It's Friday, October 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, UN report says investing in disaster risk reduction saves lives. Taliban says China ready to invest billions in Afghanistan. Unclogging Los Angeles port backup. Climate migration hits U.S. city. And retirees help migrant staff gain citizenship. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia's Victoria State has Thursday reported 2,297 new local COVID-19 cases, the highest number of daily infections recorded by any Australian state or territory since the pandemic began. But as infections surge, authorities hope to soon lift a lockdown in Melbourne within days when vaccination rates reach 70%. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
A 107-day lockdown in Sydney, the New South Wales state capital, was lifted on Monday. Despite record COVID-19 case numbers in neighbouring Victoria, epidemiologist Catherine Bennett believes vaccinations will soon bring the outbreak under control.
While we might see cases go up as we have those freedoms start to come into effect this week in New South Wales, Victoria probably in a week or two, we're now seeing that we can do that safely. That's everything.
Health authorities in Victoria don't think case numbers have yet peaked, but they say vaccination rates are increasing rapidly. They say they're on track to cancel stay-at-home orders in the state capital, Melbourne, within days. A lockdown in the national capital, Canberra, will end later on Thursday. Lockdowns in Australia are being lifted as inoculation rates hit 70% and further restrictions on domestic and international travel and the size of gatherings will end when they reach 80%. But for now, the freedoms only apply to the fully vaccinated. Nationally, about 69% of Australians have received two vaccine doses. On Thursday, Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt said the Pfizer drug could soon be approved for Australian children aged 5 to 11.
It offers additional support and protection for parents and families. It's coming at an earlier time than we had previously expected, so I'm very, very pleased about that.
Australia's Northern Territory has announced some of the world's toughest vaccine mandates. Shop workers, hairdressers and other workers must be inoculated by Christmas Eve or face dismissal. The Northern Territory has a population of about 250,000 people. It's recorded about 200 coronavirus cases and zero deaths since the pandemic began. But authorities believe it's only a matter of time before more infections are detected as Australia gradually reopens. The Territory's Chief Minister Michael Gunner says the tough vaccine measures are needed.
If you work in retail or in a supermarket, you need to get the jab. If you are behind the counter at the bank, if you're a receptionist or positions like that, you need to get the jab. If you are a barber, a hairdresser, a beauty therapist, you need to get the jab. All these workers and many, many more directly interact with members of the public. That means you are frontline workers in our economy. That means you must be vaccinated.
Australia has recorded 131,380 COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. 1,461 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Pakistan suspends flights to Kabul over what they're calling inappropriate Taliban behavior. Microsoft has shut down LinkedIn China over censorship concerns. South Korea's mudslinging primary campaign nears end. India dismisses Chinese objections to leaders' visit to disputed state. Qatar, no clear path for unfreezing Afghan funds, recognizing Taliban. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A report marking the International Day for Disaster Risk Reduction finds many deaths and economic losses from natural disasters could be averted by investing in preventive disaster risk reduction measures. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Climate-related disasters have nearly doubled over the past 20 years, with developing countries bearing the brunt of the disasters. Though extreme weather events and other disasters continue to grow, the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction says little money is being allocated to help countries prevent or reduce risks. The report finds $133 billion of official development assistance was allocated for disaster-related aid between 2010 and 2019. But only $5.5 billion was invested in measures to reduce the risks and lessen the impact of disasters. For every $100 spent on disaster-related development aid, it says only 50 cents go toward protecting development from the impact of disasters. Office for Disaster Risk Reduction Director Ricardo Mena says even that low-level ODA funding should be better targeted. He says it should be used to address the many needs of poorer, more vulnerable countries.
One would think that countries that are more prone to disasters and that experience higher mortality rates would be the ones where DRR financing would be allocated the most. But insufficient investment is being provided to prevent future disasters in areas where high mortality is likely.
Mena says failure to invest in DRR or disaster risk reduction is like buying a nice car which has no brakes.
Investing in DRR, we know it makes sense, and in terms of cost-benefit, it's tremendously positive. So, yes, we are saying it's better to attack the underlying factors of risk than having to spend more money at the time when disasters actually happen.
Academic studies find every dollar invested in disaster risk reduction prevention can result in savings of $3 to $15 in disaster losses. Mena is calling for an increase in ODA funding to help poor countries adapt to climate change and implement national strategies for disaster risk reduction. He cites small island states, the least developed countries, and landlocked developing countries as particularly needy. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, Taliban spokesman says China wants Taliban to guarantee security for their workers and assets in Afghanistan in return for billions of dollars worth of investments. Happening now in Asia, Japan's new Prime Minister Fumio Kishida dissolved the lower house of parliament on Thursday, paving the way for the October 31st elections that will be the country's first of the pandemic. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you decided to join us on VOA Asia. China wants to invest billions of dollars in Afghanistan if the Taliban guarantees security for their workers and their assets. This, according to the Taliban's acting Deputy Minister of Information and Culture, Zabihullah Mujahid, who also said his government is ready to deliver. In a television interview with VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Kabul, Mujahid responded to questions about the Taliban's negotiations with the United States and others. Afghanistan's faltering economy, women's rights, and the threat to Afghanistan's security after multiple high-profile attacks by the Islamic State in Afghanistan. Here's an excerpt from that interview with VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Kabul speaking with the Taliban's acting Deputy Minister of Information and Culture, Zabihullah Mujahid.
Let me start with security. Daesh has managed two big attacks in Kabul and numerous other small attacks in other provinces. The suicide attacker in Kunduz was a Uyghur. Has China expressed concern to you about that? What has China said to you since the attack?
We have not talked to any country about this issue. All the Daesh operatives are Afghans, so there is no foreigner among them.
You have expressed interest in China coming to Afghanistan and investing money. What is it that Taliban want China to do?
China is a neighbor and has a strong economy. We are trying to develop trade and economic relations with them. However, although we want China to have trade and investment with us, we will not tolerate any interference in our internal affairs.
When you talk to Chinese diplomats, what is it that they want in Afghanistan? What is it that they want from you? And what is it that they want to do in Afghanistan?
They want security for their workers and those who invest here in Afghanistan. They are interested in investment in some sectors in Afghanistan and want to negotiate the details. One of the projects is Mes Ainak, the site of one of Afghanistan's largest copper mines, which also holds ancient Buddhist ruins, which is one of the important areas where they want to invest billions of dollars, and Afghanistan also needs this. We have promised them security for their investment and assets.
Let me now turn to economy. Afghanistan's economy is not doing good. What is your plan to save the economy?
The economic situation is returning to normalcy. We have collected and are still collecting national resources. Our traders are ready for investment. Work on major projects, including road construction, is going on. We are close to signing agreements of exploration of minerals with some countries.
In your negotiations with the U.S., what are you hoping for? How soon do you hope the U.S. can unfreeze your money? And what are you willing to offer them in return?
Freezing Afghanistan's assets is an injustice toward the people of Afghanistan. We are negotiating with the Americans. We are also negotiating with other countries and the international banks to release this money because it belongs to the Afghan people. This is the Afghan people's bread and butter. And releasing this money is crucial to solving the economic problems of the Afghan population.
That was VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Kabul speaking with the Taliban's acting Deputy Minister of Information and Culture, Zabihullah Mujahid. The international community has strongly criticized the Taliban for not fulfilling pledges to respect women's rights and the rights of minorities, and for not including enough members from other ethnic groups in the cabinet. The Taliban continues to ban girls in grades 6 through 11 from attending school, while boys are being allowed to continue their education. The Taliban cabinet is all male, and its members are drawn mainly from Afghanistan's dominant Pashtun ethnic group. And while the Taliban have announced amnesty for everyone from the previous government, including those in the security forces or intelligence agencies, a recent amnesty report says Taliban forces unlawfully killed 13 ethnic Hazaras, including a 17-year-old girl. The report said most of those killed include Afghan security forces who had surrendered to the Taliban. Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Officials say at least 46 people were killed and another 41 injured after a fire broke out on Thursday in a decades-old mixed commercial and residential building in southern Taiwan. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday announced a plan to clear the backlog of container ships off the coast of Southern California by launching 24-hour operations at the Port of Los Angeles. American retailers and manufacturers have been plagued with shortages. And as VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports, the backlog highlights problems that have disrupted global supply chains.
Ships waiting weeks off the coast, while U.S. demand for imported goods and components from Asia soars as the nation struggles to emerge from the pandemic. Gene Soroka is executive director of the Port of Los Angeles.
Asian factories are at recorded highs in orders, but still behind the production needs of our American importers. In our industry, we've added 30% vessel capacity in the Trans-Pacific trade, and we're still leaving cargo behind.
As China struggles with power outages and Chinese factories attempt to meet demand, a bottleneck in the Pacific. Nearly 30 container ships were berthed Tuesday off the coast of Southern California. Double that number were waiting, either anchored or drifting offshore. It's a problem for Golden Grove Trading, a California company that customizes clothes and novelties from Asia. Shipping costs have soared as consumers buy products for the year-end holidays. Young Schultz is founder and CEO of Golden Grove Trading.
If we ship a 40-foot container from Shanghai to Long Beach, the cost is $2,500. And today it's $16,000, $17,000, $18,000.
Offloading and transit now take weeks instead of days at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, crucial hubs for the U.S. economy. Stephen Chung is chief operating officer of the Los Angeles County Economic Development Corporation and president of World Trade Center Los Angeles.
These two ports control over 40% of all cargo coming in by sea to the United States.
Warehouses are full, rail lines are clogged, and there are not enough truck drivers amid COVID disruptions. And the problem is national. Gene Soroka of the Port of Los Angeles.
A lot of the spotlight has been on the ports here in Southern California because we're the biggest gateway. But Seattle, Tacoma, Oakland, Savannah are all seeing a lot of cargo and ships waiting to get in and out of their ports as well.
Logistics need to be improved, says Young Schultz of Golden Grove Trading.
I don't think, you know, with a single business able to do much. It's really, we need the government help. We need everybody's help.
President Joe Biden is wrangling with Congress over infrastructure funding, including for upgrades to port facilities. He says Walmart is among the retailers that have agreed to move cargo in off-peak hours. Many international ports are active around the clock. That and better coordination along the U.S. supply chain will speed the flow of cargo through California, analysts say. Government and business need to cooperate on a plan, says an expert on the global supply chain. Christopher Tang is a business and management professor at UCLA.
We need to address the following question. Are we going to rely on imports in the future? For how long, the volume, such that we have a better understanding? Or are we going to reshore some of the supply chain back to the United States or connect to Mexico or Canada? That would be another thing. So once we understand that, then we can develop the better infrastructure to support the plan.
He says working through the backlog off the coast is the first step. Step two, rebuilding the infrastructure to match the future needs of the U.S. economy. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Making headlines in Asia, a Danish artist is seeking to get back his sculpture in Hong Kong, commemorating the victims of China's 1989 crackdown on protesters in Tiananmen Square as a deadline passed for its removal. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the effects of climate change are expected to push more than 200 million people from their homes by 2050, according to the World Bank. The impacts are already being felt in the southern U.S. state of Louisiana, where four major weather disasters struck in a nine-month period. VOA's Steve Barragona reports from the state's coastal southwest, where the damage has devastated the local economy and led to a drop in population.
I didn't want to get upset.
Claire Marceau's home in Cameron, Louisiana, was demolished by Hurricane Laura. A year later, the memories still hurt.
My husband just kept stacking up the cinder blocks. Because what else are you going to do? It's not like you have anything to repair. It's just like it was never there.
Hurricane Laura crashed ashore in August of 2020, causing $19 billion of damage across the region. Just 6 weeks later, Hurricane Delta struck. Then in February, a freakish Arctic blast. And in May, 30 centimeters of rain fell in one day. The city of Lake Charles, 48 kilometers north of Cameron, is still reeling.
If you asked me about climate change 10 years ago, I probably would have said, I think that's a bunch of hogwash or some type of made-up agenda. I don't believe that today.
Mayor Nick Hunter adds that thousands remain displaced a year after Laura. With climate disasters ratcheting up worldwide, what happened to Lake Charles demonstrates how the impacts ripple through a community. Hunter says the biggest problem is housing. Nearly half the homes were damaged in Laura and Delta alone. Joyce Nash lives on a street lined with abandoned houses.
My neighbors aren't able to come back because their home isn't livable for them to come back.
Many residents have not returned to their jobs either.
Well, they're trying to go back to work. They can't go back to work because they have nowhere to live. They have nowhere to live.
Guys, you doing okay?
Kathy Vadrine owns Steamboat Bill's, a popular Lake Charles seafood restaurant. Before the storms, she had about 50 employees.
I need about 30 more people. So if anybody wants a job, if it's a senior citizen or 15, we hire them. I had two people who lost their house. One's living with the parents. There's so many of them that have moved away.
There just aren't enough workers. And you see that down every street with every business.
Becky Franks is marketing manager with the staffing firm Manpower. She says the whole economy of the city is suffering.
From the perspective of, you know, bringing revitalization back into the community, when the doors aren't open, you know, it's a domino effect.
People in Louisiana pride themselves on their resilience. But the impacts of repeated disasters add up, says Louisiana State University anthropologist Craig Colton.
And each time a storm hits, it drives the resilience of the population further down, and they have farther to go to get out of the depressed state of the economy and their social well-being.
My daughter's name's Gabby. That's what the G's for.
Back in Cameron, Claire Marceau and her family are rebuilding. She knows life here is getting more precarious with climate change, but this is home.
We're not going to be climate refugees. I mean, I guess we already are in some ways, but we're not the only ones. It's a global crisis. It's not just here.
Steve Barragona, VOA News, Cameron, Louisiana.
And in other news, immigrant workers at the Goodwin House retirement homes in the U.S.'s Northern Virginia come from 68 different countries. When residents learned that the $725 fee to file for citizenship was a deterrent for many staff, they decided to help the immigrant workers who helped them. VOA's Laurel Bowman has our story.
Who was the second United States president?
Oh, John Adams, yes.
Questions like these might stump many American citizens.
One of the most famous conductors on the Underground Railroad.
Harriet Tubman.
But these immigrants pursuing citizenship are determined.
Susan B. Anthony.
Yes, Susan B. Anthony.
And so are the retirement home residents prepping them to take their citizenship exams. When residents learned that the $725 filing cost for citizenship was prohibitive, they decided to raise money to help the immigrant workers who do so many things for them.
So we put out the word. And through a combination of resident donations and staff donations, we had about $40,000 in 2 weeks.
Goodwin House President Rob Liebrich says the staff members come from 68 different countries and that the elder care industry is becoming increasingly reliant on immigrant workers. 90 immigrant staffers at Goodwin House have engaged in the citizenship grant process, forging friendships with their older teachers along the way.
Which state has the most people?
California.
Okay.
Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.